It is a very good evening. Today is a Wednesday. We are on the 3rd of August 2022. My name is Sean Mulaozi. We are together for the next hour. And of course, we are talking matters of national importance. Today, we are talking about the Presidential Social Sector Summit 2022. And we are using the following hashtags: PSS 2022, or also hashtag Presidential Social Sector Summit 2022. We are live from the GCIS in Pretoria, South Africa. And you can get in touch with us on 0800 142 446. That is our toll-free line. Or you can also send a WhatsApp or a voice note is encouraged to 065 935 5488. And of course, this is a new a subject matter that we must be looking into, the issue of the Presidential Social Sector Summit. But I don't know much about the summit, so I've got guests with me in the studio. I've got Mr. Peter Nechibale, who is from the Department of Social Development. Good evening and welcome to the program.
Good evening, Mr. Mulaozi, and the listeners. Good evening.
We're also joined by Mr. Nhlanhla Ndlovu, who is from the Nedlac Community Constituency, who joins us in the studio. Good evening and welcome to the program.
Good evening, Mr. Mulaozi and the listeners.
Indeed. Now, the civil society sector, it's one that I think we've all grown up knowing that, you know, you walk in the street, there's a lady who does a soup kitchen for the less fortunate and so forth. But for someone sitting at home who says, what exactly is the civil society sector? Can you define the sector itself, Mr. Ndlovu?
Well, so in South Africa, they, of course, at the very community level, we're actually having this lady that you're defining of a soup kitchen. But civil society broadly has got categories. Because it's, if you, the way to think about it is actually everything that is between government and business. So what happens in between there is your NGOs that are basically doing services all the way to actually like doing advocacy work. But you also have got maybe civic organizations that are doing like community advocacy issues and so on and so forth, like Red Pairs associations and those type of organizations.
All right.
You then have got faith-based organizations, which are about religion and about preaching like values and way of life. They are still part of the civil society. And then you're actually having like traditional leaders and traditional affairs type leadership. They are still part of civil society. So civil society basically... And actually, everybody does belong to civil society.
Okay.
Because civil society, as I'm saying, is from family to public life outside of government and business. So the space in between, then people organize themselves. They organize themselves from streets all the way to national, and they are tackling different various type of issues, from like livelihood issues of the families and households, all the way to basically advocating for policies that will create an enabling environment for growth, development, and economic development. So just to get it started, it's basically us understanding civil society in that sense, that it's basically the sector of the society that is just is about civic involvement and fostering like well-being of the communities. Thank you.
Now, I think coming from there, I mean, I'm just looking at a snapshot here that tells us there is about 256,212 organizations that are registered in the space. Now, to bring it to the Department of Social Development, let's talk about the role of civil society in promoting development.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mulaozi. I think let's start from the concept of... the civil society and the state.
Yes. That partnership.
Yeah. I think government recognizes the work that the civil society do. And especially coming to what we are going to do tomorrow, is in that recognition, the role that civil society have played, even before democracy to date, in terms of what they do. And I think... Nkaka mentioned the issue of the civil society, which is between the state and the community, anything that works, that is in between. And in the same cohort of civil society, we have got different issues. You mentioned non-profit organization.
Yes.
You mentioned a faith-based organization. he mentioned the issues of civic organizations like Community Policing Forum. He mentioned a range of things. So in terms of that, the Department of Social Development have singled out one of those and is the custodian of the non-profit sector.
Okay.
So the non-profit sector, I think, from time immemorial, there have been non-profit organizations that are doing a range of things also.
All right.
Then they promulgated an Act of Parliament, which is Act 71 of 1998, mm-hmm. signed by President Mandela. The Act legalized the aggregations of people or give a legal status to a community-based organization to be a non-profit organization. That's why the numbers that we are reading is one sector of the civil society. There's other ranges of them that are not part, which I think from the NEDLEC point of view, there's more than that, which are the civic organization, a lot of those. But from the non-profit sector, which is a subset of a civil society, is the NPO, where we do the registration. In South Africa, it is done in the Department of Social Development, where we have about 256 NPO registered currently. But there's a lot of other range. You saw, you mentioned the faith-based organization.
Yes.
There are so many churches. They're not registered. Mm. But they serve communities. They do a lot within communities. And other forums and sectors within the society that are. So in view of those sectors, the president, in recognizing that and in cementing partnership between the state and the civil society, proposed that we organize a summit where we look at what other issues that need to be done. This is in view of the looking at what they do, which sometimes is seen as if government is not recognizing their presence. So this summit is going to make sure that we grow closer to each other, work together, and also find the way of dealing with the issues that are bothering communities at the present moment. There's a lot of things that civil society does, ranging from employing, job creation, to food security, to just organizing community. One of the things that I have is a community policing forum. Mm. That is informal, and it does a lot to protect the people. And this envisage of what is happening currently in the country in terms of social ills and others, there's a need that the civil society need to be recognized.
Now, I think emanating from what you just gave in terms of a background, I think it becomes important for me to come back to you and also just look at, maybe give us a situational analysis of, in South Africa, civil society organizations. Where are they just on the eve of the summit? And where do we expect them to be after the summit?
Yeah. I think there's various studies that are showing which have diagnosed civil society.
Mm-hmm.
So first, in South Africa, we do have civil society. I mean, you can also see by the number of registrations of NPOs that we are talking about. But there's NPCs as well. There's a not-for-profit trust.
Mm-hmm.
There's existence of faith-based organizations registered and not registered.
Mm-hmm.
So we are having a sector that is already like existing, and it has existed for a very long time. Now, the sector, unlike in most developed nations, they have found a way of basically resourcing the sector to such an extent that there's almost civil society for every sector of society.
Okay.
So in South Africa right now, the state we are in is that there's an existence of civil society, and because registration doesn't depict the real situation, there's a number of registered NPOs that are even not, that are doing wonderful work,
mm-hmm.
supported by government, supported by donors, supported by private sector, like corporate social, there's loads of them. But there's also civil society that basically responds two challenges.
Mm.
They may actually be organized in response to something. It could be gender-based violence in a specific location.
All right.
What is going on in Tembisa today is civil society action, the shutdowns and stuff like that, civil society organizations. But there's not been appropriate recognitions. There's fragmentation. I mean, as Mr. Nechipal is also indicating, there are those that are actually in social development,
mm-hmm.
Who are NPOs. We have got not-for-profit companies in the Department of Trade, Industry and Competition. You have got trust in the Master's Office, which is Department of Justice. Then you actually have civics that are on their own. But we actually have all the other, like your taxi associations, a civil society. Your sports board is like the Premier Soccer League is civil society.
Sanco and the like.
Sanco, civics. So we have that. But we are fragmented as civil society. And it's a diagnosis that has been made in research, but we are aware of ourselves. Secondly, we are not properly resourced. Pre-94, there was a lot of funding. It came from donors. It came from, like, even present as a ways of mobilizing, including self-funding.
Mm-hmm.
Today, we are finding a situation where there may be a lot of resources, but they are directed badly. They are not following national priorities. So then the question you're asking, in the summit we have diagnosed, actually, you could see there's the documents that we've produced, the concept document. We also have got the framework agreement that traces where we come from.
Okay.
So in the post summit, we are actually going to have a better coordinated civil society. We are going to have better focus in terms of things we are doing, like, I mean, fostering transformation,
mm-hmm.
Getting a regulation right, including self-regulating, and that is about improving accountability and improving registration and so on and so forth. We are going to have a better way of resource mobilization, which will include pooling of resources and directing them to priority areas for our communities. So we are actually having a situation that redefines and reforms the entire space in a manner that is actually enabling us as a nation to be on a path towards where, like, most developed countries are. Maybe just as a closing shot.
Mm-hmm.
The good example of what happens when civil society is happy is in Ukraine. Now, Ukraine, Russia declared that it shall be attack on Ukraine.
A special military operation.
The special military operation. You have to ask yourself, why then the population of Ukraine didn't cower under such threat? It is because there's been a lot of resources over the past maybe 30 years after the fall of the Berlin Wall and then the collapse of the Soviet Union that have gone to Ukraine from NATO nations.
Hmm.
And these are about changing the way of life of Ukrainians to be separate from the way, like, the Eastern Europeans are living. So these investments have actually enticed the population to a situation where they feel that there's a way of life that they have got to defend.
Mm.
And that is civil society that is picking up, like, civilians picking up guns, say, we are defending ourselves against, like, bombardment from fighter jets and all type of bombardment. So that's what, in South Africa, if you were to ask now, you can see, in fact, that at least 10 years back, there was better cohesion.
Mm.
But today, civil society is so critical that you can attack, it could even side with attackers than to protect
or
our
defend
nation.
The nation.
Yeah.
I think I understand very well. Bonachipale, government has got different layers of it dealing with issues of civil society. I mean, he just mentioned that some are registered with the Master's Office, with the Master of the High Court, which is Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, DTI, for the non-profit companies. But why was it important for social development to take the lead in this matter from the side of government to say, we will take leadership on issues of civil society? And secondly, from your side, what was your assessment of the situation in terms of civil society that necessitated the need for the summit?
No, thanks very much. From the government point of view, as I've mentioned, one of the things that necessitated that we should have a summit with the civil society, it is in recognition of what they do.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you an example of the social Department of Social Development services. The majority of the services of the Department of Social Development is delivered by the non-profit sector or the civil society themselves. Range of services that are done by them. And I think in the making, we understood that even in 1936, when welfare services were started, the role of the civil society was defined as the one that are going to deal with the issue of social, they will deal with welfare services. Reasons being that they are close to the community. They are there. They are the one who feels and hears everything within the community. And that the Department of Social Development aim is to create a better living for society, to make sure that each and every individual is sustainable and is well taken care of. Now, you can ask a question why in 1996 there was a call that all the CBOs or those CBOs that seek to get a legal status must be registered and they must be given a legal status. It is on that basis that when the donors came here, they were looking for an organized, legalized form of an entity. And that's why the Non-Profit Act was promulgated. The act doesn't only register anybody who wants to be associated in terms of the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, Section 18, that when you want to be associated, you will be registered only to do with social development. No. We register NPOs that deals with a range of things. It's about these categories in terms of about 12 categories of NPOs. Some is development and research. Others are registered for housing. Others are registered for literature. Others are registered for social services. Out of the 256 NPOs that are registered, it's only 38% that are social development. The rest is others. Education, health, they deal with a range of issues. So in that, it is important, it was also important that we influence others. When CPIC, DTI, changed the, amending the Company Act, mm-hmm. They brought in an area of non-profit company for those companies that don't want to be non-profit. That was. And also, we also influenced it to categorize them in terms of different areas. And the trust. But all the others, once they are registered as whatever they have, for them to get what you call the public benefit status, in terms of the SARS Act, mm-hmm. You will need to register as an NPO for the purpose that you've said that to influence that this must be civil. And once you register an NPOs and you apply for the PBO status from the SARS Act, you're given a PBO. In other words, you are regarded, you don't pay tax for that matter, mm-hmm. because you work for the community. You don't make profit. Even if you make profit, the proceeds of what you make is geared to assist communities. He mentioned something about the issues of the civic power in Ukraine.
Yes.
This country is what it is through the civil society organization that was there before democracy. Everyone fighting to end apartheid. Everyone fighting for their rights. It is that what we have recognized to say we are drifting away from the original dream that we have, that we must go back. And it's talking about the issue of resourcing, the issue of looking at this sector as the driving force within communities. We are talking about social cohesion today.
Mm.
But in communities where you have better, well looked after a civil society, they are better off because they deal things for themselves. They are aware of what is happening. You won't go and steal. If you steal, you would ask, whose child is this, in actual fact? Who is terrorizing us? And the community has got a voice. The whole area is about community having a voice in their own development. What is happening currently is just that, I think what I'm quoting is not yet published, is that there is a drift from the issue of communities looking at themselves as the creator of their own assets, as the creator of their own well-being, and look somewhere else. We talk about work, work, work. Instead of community producing for themselves, community doing things for themselves. If your work is something else, you add on top of that. But we as community, you will remember very well, in the traditional center, traditional leader center, Mahosi.
Yes.
Ona Kansela Mahosi. If your child goes and breaks somebody's window, we hold you accountable. Kosin. Hey, on Sunday we go there and say, hey, anyone I knew you who have done this? And you find a goat or a head or whatever, or not money. You find with whatever you have. That was saying we as communities need to take care of ourselves. So as we move, I don't know, it's not capitalism, but as we move with the development and others, we tend to forget the civil society. And that is the, you look at, there's a lot, so many things. There's so many social issues, alcohol, substance abuse, rape, GBV. But even the president, if you look at what has happened in Eastern Cape, there's one thing that the president mentioned. Where were the communities around here? Why didn't you see this is wrong? Because I can't come from Pretoria and go to Eastern Cape and say people don't do. It's the community themselves. So the civil society has got a voice and they've got power. So it is in that context that we're thinking that, and I think even the 1936 vision of making them in charge of services was the best in terms of them taking junk. If you partner with the department, you do some, we will do some. They are there 24 hours. They can see everything. Our department is the one that has contributed a lot to the civil society. Spend a lot of money, but it's on the one side of civil society, which is the NPO side, in recognition of what they do and how important is it. So the NEDLEC community constituency is the leader in doing that, is a driver, and they are the coordinator for that. So this summit will energize that. And look at the how far we have drifted from what was planned post-democracy or pre-democracy or post-democracy in 1994 to bring forth this sector to take charge. And if you partner with you, you must tell us, why are these people striking next door? Someone must tell us. We know, the government must not go and say, don't strike. No. Someone must tell us, why are they striking? For what good reason? Wouldn't we have another way? It goes on and on the things that is happening. And it is through civil society that this partnership that we are pursuing, that we'll be able to get the best of this country. Thank you.
We are joined in studio by the two guests, Mr. Peter Netshibale from the Department of Social Development and Mr. Ntantla Ndlovu, who is from the NEDLEC community constituency, which is taking leadership on what we are talking about today, the Presidential Social Sector Summit 2022. And we will talk about when it actually takes place a bit later on. 0800-142-446. That is our number if you want to call through on a Telkom free line. And then you can also send us a voice note on 065-935-5488. I've got Matlangu from Siyabuswa on the line. Mr. Matlangu, good evening and welcome to the program.
Siyaphila
wanonjani?
Sikhona.
Uthini umbuzo wakho?
wabumashango manu ukhala ngokuthi ama NPOs la khona around siyabuswa abaninkinga eziningi zokuthi athola adlelwa imali kunendaba eziningi ezingapheliwe. Now if ama NGOs la ayasafara singa reporta kuphi lama NPOs baka lenkinga?
And then idlowa bani leyo mali
ma government officials uthola ukuthi babhizi benza ezinye izinto ezingekho right, then at the end ama NGOs uthola usebenza nabantu for 5 years awukhoni nokubaphi stipend but ma ufika kwa-SARS uyakoleta.
Ewu,
awazi ukuthi le mali uyithathaphi. So sifuna ukwazi ukuthi njengabo labo baba ama-guest wakho bangasinceda kanjani, or bangasipha ama-email wabo sibabhalele ama-emails thina singakhona basipha ama-email address sizobabhalela.
All right, no sikuzwile baba Mahla.
Siyabonga.
Asibonge. Mbutiso Yophala, the question is I think more related to the department, but I think also you can just chip in. Is this a problem wherein funding is created but it doesn't reach the intended beneficiaries?
Yes, it is a problem. So how do we know? First, we are the people who are suffering. So this is the person who's speaking is our member.
Yes.
Now, this summit, part of the improvement and reforms we're going to bring about, it's a resolution that has come from provincial consultations and the build-up process. It's part of the resolutions is to create an ombudsperson,
okay,
for civil society,
as they have in many sectors.
Now, this ombudsperson will basically have the ombuds powers like everybody. Because you see, the point is that sometimes there's embezzlement by officials of government, but there's also like problems where money gets to NGOs and doesn't do what
it's meant to do.
And there are members who work, break their backs over years before they are funded. And once they are funded, there's somebody, some strong man or woman, who embezzles funds.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of issue, Baba, which is so called the structure, let's say ombudsman. So, and the ombudsperson, in a registration, our resolutions affect her equation. The ombudsperson, but secondly, there will be registration. In the next 5 years, we will have a process of creating a database of all civil society organizations and also practitioners, even if we're only in education, but we are running an NGO. So that we are, once you are, You are disciplined through a disciplinary process, or in the ombudsperson found guilty, we are blacklisted. Currently, you know, there are people who are blacklisted. Why?
Yes.
NPO can blacklist them, then Bahambe Bayo wins the NPC. But through the NPC, Bayo we trust. So they continuously like pivoting to new things. So one of the things so was blacklist an individual. Or a practitioner in the sect, so that if Leo Mundevela again to our law is actually found guilty, it's like the same thing that happens with the Institute of Directors, where you are seen as a delinquent director.
Oh, yes.
You can now be seen as a delinquent
practitioner
in the space. So those are things that, but it's stuff that is not there right now.
Mm-hmm.
What the alternative that is here right now is actually going to burden the police. That is actually right now dealing with crime of people being marked and all type of things. Then you come and say that, and usually there's difficulty of getting evidence. So you're going to go and say, Mr. Nechipale is creating his own NGOs and funding them. And you have got no proof. And police are going to say, no, but this person is wasting our time. So we're actually going to create a situation where there's increased accountability internally, including then the ombudsperson who's in the sector. And then he's able to work with the law enforcement agencies. Once this person's blacklisted and say, you know, we either want to recover the assets, but we also want this person to be punished to the full extent of the law.
Mr. Nechipale, on your side as government, how do you respond to Baba Mahlangu?
Thanks very much for that. It's true. I said something earlier, Uri. I think the country has drifted, I don't know if it's towards capitalism or towards so dependent on money rather than dependent on the assets that we have, or what we can create.
Mm.
The issue of fraud, the issue of embezzlement of money is so rife. We fund over 21,000 NPOs, SDSD, nationally in all 9 provinces. And those in those NPOs that are funded, we always experience such cases being reported. But when we go deeper in terms of why are these fraud happening, it is not necessarily the fault of anyone. It is the fault of the NPO itself. If you look at how I will address it in two ways.
Okay.
He asks one to say, where should he report? But the first thing is not necessarily where it should report. A non-profit organization or civil society in an area, if you are registered, we require you to have 6 members as board members, the leaders of the community. And those members, the chair, the deputy, the secretary, similar, the top 6 of the NPO.
All right.
And those people are the board. Nothing must happen in the NPO without their knowledge.
Okay.
And they must not be related. And they must be coming to the vicinity where the NPO is established. So what happens is that the NPO themselves, they are formed with a fictitious names. But people, one is in Venda, the other one is in Eastern Cape, and they are established in one area. So therefore, the NPOs do not account to anyone. In actual fact, that NPO must appoint a project manager or someone to manage when they are funded, because we will have costed how much people are going to be. Board members are not supposed to be paid unless it's the reimbursement of the petrol they used or whatever. They are not supposed to be paid. They are there to ensure accountability and the governance of the NPOs.
Yes.
But where found now, I established an NPO. It's mine, and it's in Kanga, it's my friend, it's whatever. When I get the money, I don't account to anyone. It's mine alone. Whereas it's supposed to be the people that are around you. Then the fall of the ethical issues that is happening, non-ethical issues that are happening within NPOs, and not following the procedures on how the NGO need to be established and how they need to function, is one cause.
Okay.
Second one is the issue of when you are funded for a specific service, and the way you are supposed to render those services. Let's say you are an ECD, early child development. It's a crutch.
Yes.
Kids must come here. Some of them will pay extra. We will fund you. We will appoint people. Therefore, everyone around must be aware that there's a crutch and it's funded, and the board must be informed in time. And yearly, you have got a general annual meeting of that area, a judiciary area. It's not mine. It's not a business.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a business. It's not a business. It's not mine. It's not what I'm going to make profit of. So there is a lot of departure from that. And I think that's why he's talking about the ombudsman. There is a need for that. Third thing is that any member of the community, if they suspect that there's fraud in the NPOs, they can either phone the Department of Social Development. If it's in Siyabuswa, you don't phone the district, because the district won't do anything. It might be coming from that district. You need to phone national. There's a number national that you can phone, which is 012-312-7727. Or the toll-free number is 0800-428-428. You need to report that. If you are sure, if you are a member of the NPO and you realize that the chairperson and they are really embezzling the funds and there are issues, you can report a case and report and write to the NPO directorate. Or there is this issue that I've identified, I report a case, this is a case number. We'll come and audit that.
So there
is a cause for that. But studies that we've done, we find that some of the things that are happening is perpetuated by even the people that are supposed to be preventing it. That's why the ambush is very important, because they will report anything, anytime, and then their books will be looked after, because government sometimes takes long. When talking about Pretoria, what if we get about 100 calls per day for that? We get a lot. People, it's a lot. Even in Ikwande Valley, there is also, well, I won't say it, but an NPO that immediately they get the money, they fire the board. They appointed a new one. They put everybody new board. And then nothing which what they were funded for was done. And there's nobody to take. So community need to be able to be informed, and they must hold the NPO accountable, because it's what you call the civil society sector for the community. And that's why it was created. And yearly, we require your reports.
Mm.
We see now that only 48% of the NPOs are reporting. The rest are not. And there's a remedy, there's a recourse. If you don't report, we...
Withhold funding.
You won't be able to be funded if you're not reporting. But also we close the NPOs. We deregister. If you were funded and we deregister you, we come there, we give the proceeds of anything that you have to an EGA NPO. It's not yours. It's not your own property. If an NPO buys a house, it's not anybody's house. It's the house of the NPO. You can't sell it and say, I'm selling my house now to you. No. It's the proceed is there in the act. The proceed of what you have in the non-profit organization belongs to a community.
So it can be transferred.
It can be, yeah, we transfer it to the next. I think that's what Nedlec and Ngovu was talking about, an ambush, because sometimes what you get, which is reported by Baba Makhlangu, it's a network. It becomes a network. Broader than what you think. And people can see from outside, but you go to and report to the same person who have done that, it's a problem. So then an ambush which is independent could be a good answer for that.
Maybe just chip in on the so that's a stick.
Yes.
There's a carrot as well.
Okay.
Because we mustn't always assume that, okay, there's sometimes where we have found, in fact, that there's problems of people not understanding their own fidu share responsibilities.
Oh, yes.
You may actually have a board that actually thinks that we are buying this house, so it is a matala side. And it's because they are entitled to that. So one of the things that Mr. Neshipal is talking about is about governance. So in what we are resolving is that we will also have capacity building.
Mm.
We'll build a capacity of civil society organizations, NPOs and everybody to govern, to undertake governance. So that the chair knows what the chair is supposed to do, treasurer knows what the treasurer is supposed to do, or even like in discussions with Saiba, that is actually saying that they can train and give status of treasurers as finance managers, because they are an institution that is actually able to recognize such qualifications. The second part is actually providing training on financial management, because you see, a contract could be saying, in fact, that only this 10% must go to project management and administration. And then you find that the NGO spends 80%
on administration
and project management, and like 20% on delivering the service. Now, they may not be doing it intentional. It may be because they feel that that's what they have to do. So part of what we're going to do is to build their capacity to understand the laws that regulate them, but they are fighting to share the responsibilities, and then hope that there's going to be improvement of performance. But in the event then the performance doesn't improve, then the stick kicks in.
I think we'll go to the lines now. I think we have Moses, who is on the line. Moses Khumalo from Esho. Sawubona baba Khumalo.
Ngibingelele msakazi kabanjani.
Siyaphila njani?
Ngiphila kakhulu. Ukhuluma no Moses Khumalo from Esho eMbongolwane.
Mhm.
Uyazi khona leli point engifuna ukuthi ngiliveze la. La khona la othola ukuthi uhulumeni kwesinye isikhathi uzenzile yena izinto wayeqeda wasebanikeza abantu iinamba ezokuthi uma kukhona but a crime la umuntu angareporta khona ngithi yabona.
Yebo. Yes, now.
Into eyenzakalayo la yile. Uma ngabe thina singabahlali abanye bethu thola ukuthi bayahluleka bona ukuthi bayiphathe kahle. Angeke sablema phela uhulumeni ngento esuke yenziwa abanye bethu. Manje into efike yenzeke la ukuthi ufike atholakala umuntu enza icrime and then uthola ukuthi icrime ayenze uthola ukuthi amanye amaphoyisa ayahluleka umsebenzi wawo. And then uhulumeni ayikhiphe inamba cha ke nazi inamba for the report zone. Manje angeke sisablema uhulumeni ngento eyenziwa yithina. Uthi umbuzo ke sikhatha apha abantu ukuthi uhulumeni uyahluleka ukuthi enze ukuthi ekubeni uma sithule kahle sobheka yithina futhi esenza icrime uhulumeni aphinde futhi yena futhi ayivule eminyango yokuthi akwazi ukuthi abantu abasize. Like example nje isibonelo. Uma ngisuka nje mina manje nguMoses Khumalo ngihambe ngiyontshontsha. Uma sengebile umuntu avula icala amaphoyisa ahluleke ukusebenza icala. Usengathi umuntu uhulumeni owenza leyo nto. Cha. Into engafanele iyenzeke ngafanele phela kuphume amanye amaphoyisa awaziyo umsebenzi wawo. Amthathe uMoses Khumalo amfalele ngaphakathi ngoba usuke enze icala. Iyona ke lento ke yenza ukuthi uhulumeni ayikhiphe inamba ukuthi reportani lana. Ngoba phela uthi umbuzo uma ngabe wena uyiphoyisa uhlulwa umsebenzi wakho. Umsebenzi wakho lo uyakuhlula. Awenzi wobani phela ngoba njengoba uqashiwe nje kumele phela uwenze umsebenzi wakho ngendlela efanele. Manje uma sekuwena ohlulekayo awenzi wobani. Iyona ke lento ebanga ukuthi uhulumeni ke kube khona inamba ayikhipha cha reportani phela. Ukuze nikwazi nithole usizo. Yiloo nto msakazi ngiyabonga.
Hayi asibonge baba Khumalo. I think before we take any responses, we also have two WhatsApp voice notes on the line. I think we'll go to WhatsApp for that.
Good evening, Sean, and the two guests there. My name is Aserin Lovu from Pretoria. I just want to understand something. With these NPOs, NPCs, and all these kind of companies that are being funded or are being supported by the DSD and NEDLAG, why does it always has to have a number of directors in order to qualify or to have the status of being an NPO or an organization that can be funded? Because sometimes you can have two directors or three directors that can run this thing and make it work. However, uthola ukuthi manje it needs to have at least five members. And now people, some of us, we end up going out there looking for people. And when we find these people, you get ukuthi it's just people that wants to just sit there and chow money, as per Mr. Mahlangu is saying now. These people doesn't have that goal, that doesn't have this thing ukuthi they want to really work. So now I want to understand, which one can one go with that needs at least a lower number of directors so that it can get to its feet and operate in a much productive way than this one of having five or more directors. Thank you so much.
And the second one?
Sir, thank you very much for this very important summit that you're coming. coming up with. I really believe that such a summit, we, if it was possible for me, I would say quarterly, we need such to, such summits, looking into the socio-economic challenges that we are facing. So I really believe that we really need to have such summits. And I just want to applaud the Department of Social Development for coming up with such programs, including these programs that you are having, these radio programs that you are having, in terms of educating our people about what the department is doing. So my advice or what I'm thinking is that we really need such a summit. But also in terms of the provinces, I would just want to know, in terms of the provinces, especially provinces which have high cases of, you know, where we see most of our young people are struggling or are not doing well, such as the Northern Cape, where we see there's a lot of teenage pregnancy, there's a lot of crime, and also we see that most young people are into substance abuse. Such summits, do you have them in provinces or in districts, to also educate our young people about, you know, the dangers of being involved in things like crime, mm-hmm. things like teenage pregnancy, and all that, all these social ills? So my question is, do you go into provinces and make research, you know, to understand the challenges that young people are facing, and also how do you assist those young people? This is Olebogeng Malale from Kimberley in the Northern Cape.
I think, thank you very much, Olebogeng. Last one, we'll take Thabo from Makado. Thabo?
Hello?
Da.
No, Aurin.
Neroto.
Neroto.
Eh.
I don't know if I'm on air.
We are on air, sir.
Okay. Firstly, I'd like to greet both of your guests and also greet you.
Nah.
My name is Thabo from Makado, and the teacher is Makado FM. Now, I have a question. I hear about the summit and what your guests are saying about empowering those who are running NPOs and NGOs. So I want to know, what systems are there in place to ensure that people working at the DSD themselves abide by the policies? Because, for example, say I work at the DSD, right? Or I work within a finance where I can influence where funds go. And then I speak to maybe a brother of my in-law and I ask him, open a company, we'll transfer, we'll make sure that whatever you apply for gets to you. Are there any system to ensure that any members that work with funding don't benefit, since, I mean, everybody's trying to think out the box and trying to get the money? Because I think sometimes they say, you know what, there's a bulk of money available and people are not aware that this is how they can access money. So that is my question.
Thabo, Roliwa Ngamanda Ngambutso Yavotir.
Thank you.
Yeah, no, questions came. The time is also small, but we have 5 minutes. Let's find ways to wrap this up. There are three questions that have been posed. Aseri is asking, how do we, what sort of sector must he go in if he wants to have less than six directors to start his NPO or NPC? And then I think there's also the idea of, and then still be able to get the public benefit status. That is, I think, very critical in that regard. And then there's this issue of how are you, as DSD, capacitating your staff or making sure that there's vigilance and that there's no fraud to that element. And I think there is one you want to take?
Yeah. I can start.
Yes.
These three questions quickly. It's easy to start an MPO. Minimum three, okay. Maximum six. It's not directors.
Okay.
It is an assurance structure. It's a board.
All right.
Board. It's a board. So if you are in a village, you can take a teacher, the community member, It's a board. And you, the originator of the idea of doing that, you are part.
All right.
It allows them to make you accountable. They are not directors. When you are funded, you must appoint people to manage that, including yourself.
Right.
One can manage with other people outside. Remember, you must create jobs.
Yes.
And the board must be informed. And you must have meeting. It's a governance structure. That's what we are talking of when you register in an MPO. And it must be people that are within the village that are going to hold you accountable.
Right.
Even if you take your friend, they must make you accountable of that. That's why we don't want relatives. Two, the issue of the how the issue of community education, and I think NEDLEC will take that in terms of how is done. Last one is Thabo Makado. Funding the NGOs up in South Africa, especially in DSD and other government departments, you don't just get. There is some processes that you need to follow. You advertise, you are adjudicated, and we award. If the members of the board are related to anybody who is doing the funding, he must declare. Right? You must declare.
So that. If you work in finance,
yeah,
you must declare.
I'm not going to be able to take money from myself and give it to you. We have developed a policy that forces everyone, but it doesn't force others. It's only for DSD.
Yes.
In others, that can happen at a local level. I don't know how it works, but in the DSD, there's a policy that when you're funding for ECD or you're funded for home-based care and others, you apply and those things are. If I have an NPO that is from Nechipare and then there's Nechipare, I must recuse myself from doing that. You're not allowed to be part. And adjudication is made out of a variety of people, so independent people that are there. And also in their reporting, when an NPO report, we need an audited financial statement. If an NPO comes with a financial statement and there's 50,000 withdrawn from an account, they must explain what they're doing with the 50,000. That's what it's supposed to be. Or else, we will recommend that you are not going to file any. You're not allowed to do that, unless you are paying for services where there's any. For this must tell you, I paid this, and electronic transactions will be corroborated by invoices when you do an auditing for an NPO. So it's very strict, but I'm not saying that doesn't happen. In different areas, people find ways to deal with that. But we are tried to do what is supposed to be done. You need to be very smart to be able to go to that level. But at this level, it's very bad. NPOs that embezzles money or do something, if we give you money today, anything above 20,000, and you owe more than 20,000, get into your account, FIC keeps it up. They will report to us, NPO get 500,000. And we don't know where it comes from. Oh, 500,000 is withdrawn. Somebody withdrawn 170,000 after the money have gone. 170. FSA reported, we find it stacked. So there's assurance structures. There is some accounting processes that has been. I'm not article Hanezori. Ongasivena incidences where such can happen in very... It can happen in this country.
Understood. I think, Olebogeng, we would wanted to get into your issue and respond to him properly, but unfortunately, time is no longer our friend. We are a minute over, but we have not spoken about the summit tomorrow. So, most importantly, can we just give the details of the summit to say where is it happening, who is invited, and where does one register to attend?
The summit is taking place tomorrow in Bechut, which is in Ekurhuleni, in Gauteng. In terms of who I invited, I will ask my the NEDLAC to elaborate on that. And it's hosted on the request of the president, and the president will address the summit on the second day, and other ministers will be there. It's a very comprehensive summit that is being held. It is 4 and 5, Bechut.
From what time to what time?
From tomorrow, it starts 8:30 until 18 hours. Mm-hmm. And on Friday, we start the same 8:30 until lunchtime. And there will be, let me allow the net, like he must say his things on that.
Yes, right.
And we will be streaming that also live.
On the social media pages of the department.
Yeah, no, not on the department. On the social media of the department. It will be streamed live.
Indeed. Who is invited to the summit tomorrow?
We have got about 600 delegates.
Mm-hmm.
450 delegates are coming from the 9 provinces, with 50 delegates per province. They are drawn from each district. It's something that it was actually like part of the build-up process to get delegates from each district of the country and metros. And then like it's across civil society structures, as I was saying, NPOs, NPCs, trusts, civic organizations, traditional leaders, faith-based organizations, they have drawn from the huge array. And there's actually government, again, who come from district 10 provinces as part of the 50 per province. Then there's national, in the other 150, there's national leaders of civil society in various sectors, as well as national government officials. We also have invited some of the businesses that work in corporate social investment and such type of stuff, as well as some international guests.
But it looks like it's going to be a jam-packed session coming up from tomorrow, the 4th of August until the 5th of August 2022. It is the Presidential Social Sector Summit, and the president is also billed to address the delegates there. You can, of course, follow this summit online on the social media pages of the Department of Social Development. My name is Sean Mulaozi. I'd like to say to my two guests, Mr. Peter Nechibale from Social Development, thank you very much for joining us, and also Mr. Nhlanhla Ndlovu from the NEDLAC Community Constituency for also being part of this program. And if you have some malfeasance that you'd like to report about, the sector is 012-312-7727 or the toll-free number 0800-428-428. A very good evening from me to you.